Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's so deadly serious that its tagline is the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you will most definitely go friggin' nuts. And my very special guests, who have certainly not lost their sense of humour, are Dr. Rima Labo and also General Burton. I didn't get quite the last name of the general himself.
It's a stubble bind. It's very difficult. It's much easier to use your name.
Yeah. General Burt Stubblebine. How does one actually become a general?
With a great deal of care, a great deal of work, and a lot of luck.
Is a connection thing, like a good amount of networking, and you meet the right person at the right time, you get the right job and the right in the right division, the right company, and boom, you got a career path.
I think there's a lot to that. Obviously, the experience that you have as you have moved up in the ranks means an awful lot in terms of your selection, because the selection is all done by a board of generals. They, you collect a whole bunch of other senior generals, and they go through every file, you know, sort of paper by paper, and they are the ones, each one then decides who gets promoted, and then the whole group has to agree. In other words, they match General 1 with General 2 with General 3, and all of the, each of us put everybody in a sort of an order, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then they take all of the ones that were there, and, they then decide who actually gets promoted out of this sort of system. So it's not an easy task, and you may have one friend, but in this situation, you got to have all of them as friends in order to get promoted.
Aren't the generals who are already there all friends anyway, though? So if you've got one friend, you got all friends.
Well, the answer to that's yes, but each one of the selected persons on the board makes his own list.
I've never been to a general officer selection board. I am a far post-military wife, and with pleasure. But have you never heard of rivalry? Have you never heard of territoriality in organizations? I cannot imagine that these high-ranking guys didn't each have their own fiefdoms and their own political rivals, and they weren't going to give any ground to...
That's for certain. But every fiefdom borders with another, and it's usually upon those borders where they make peace.
That's true.
Yes.
And but the system is each one of the individual persons selected on the board makes his own list, and then you begin to match the list to see how many were number one and how many were number two and blah blah blah, and it's out of that. So it's a while it may have some influence. It's not an easy thing to influence the everybody who is on the board so that your guy gets moved forward and somebody else's guy does not. It's quite a unique process, as a matter of fact, Vinny.
It's sort of like if you have a sphere, how many ways can you come at a sphere in terms of a three-dimensional universe? You can come at it from pretty much any angle, 360 degrees, in various different directions. And it's sort of like if you are the sphere in the middle and you're being attacked from all directions, which part of you gives way and which part of you holds up and resists? And it's the person who holds up to scrutiny from as more directions than anyone else that winds up getting selected.
That's correct. You got it. And so the system may have some flaws in it, but it's in terms of many selection systems, it's a pretty, first of all, reliable, and second of all, pretty close to being moving the people who need to be moved forward, forward, and those that are on the edge just don't make it.
What is the objective? Because when the Department of Defense was renamed under the advisal of Edward Bernays, to become the Department of Defense, what was the actual goal intended with the use of the military? Because is it about retracting, holding position, or is it about taking territory?
Well,
a little bit of both, most likely.
That's a very, very interesting question, because if you had asked me that question when I was on active duty, I would have said primarily for protection of the U.S. and its assets. As I now look at things from a very different perspective, because I've been out since 1984, I retired in 84, and I have seen things happening by the United States which don't make any sense to me as a soldier, as an officer, as a career military person, because they appear to be more, I've got to protect my territory, but my territory is not the United States. My territory is all of those territories that have oil. So I am making sure that I will have a sufficient oil supply to keep all the billionaires billionaires and the millionaires millionaires and all the cars moving around smelling or putting out smog. That's very different. See that, Vinny, that's a very different aspect from the one that I lived with or was when I was on active duty.
That's from the outside looking in.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. Like, you retired the same year that I was born, and I'm going to be turning. and I just realized, you know, it's like 30 years ago, right? I'm 29 now, and I'm gonna turn 30 at the end of this year on the 29th of December. And I was just thinking about it last night that I was born near the end of 1984, and I'm thinking about the symbology there, you know.
Yeah, well, I was retired in July of 1984, so I've been out. I've been busy, but I've been out of the military since that 30 years, isn't it?
Well,
this July will be 30.
Can you talk about as well the very focus of the discussion on here? Because from a military perspective, if we're talking about seizing strategic resources, you're going to be thinking about complex game theory, the amount of strategy that's involved with conquering territory and holding it in order to extract resources from it. And one of the general methodologies, pardon the pun, is to use chemtrail geoengineering, or as you call it, neo-geoengineering. Could you explain a little bit about that?
Well, let me go back to your earlier statement of protecting our assets. I really did believe at one point that all of our military forces that were either in actual combat or were there to prevent combat were for the protection of the United States. This is hard to say, Vinny, but it comes right from my heart. I really believed in that story. Then I retired, and I began to watch what was happening. I lived through the trade towers and attack on the trade towers. And I really believe that that was an outside enemy that did that. Then one day I was, I'd gotten a flu and I was in bed. I was not well. And I was bored stiff, frankly, because I couldn't get up and out. And I began to read and look around.
May I add something?
Yes.
Okay. By this time, Bert and I were married, and I had been telling Bert things about the topic that we're talking on right now that he was not paying any attention to. He didn't want to believe me. He said, come on already, not my country, not my army, not my establishment. And I said, look at the documentary evidence. Look at the documentary evidence. And he wouldn't. He couldn't because...
Incidentally, she's absolutely right. I refused. My mind was so set on what I believed that I would not listen,
Vinny.
That he
was blind, deaf, and dumb because he was indoctrinated. His dad was a man of great honor, a career military guy, also a West Point graduate. And so he lived in this delusion that was so carefully engineered by the system. And he was completely impervious to fact. It was very strange in a guy who is so open-minded and so so available to new information. This was unavailable. And he had gotten the flu, which we don't get anymore now because of nanosilver, but I didn't have it then. And he was in bed, and he was too sick to want to live and too well to want to die. He was in that intermediate.
Hold on one second. It seemed like there was a little thing of background there, like somebody taking their blood pressure testing or something like that.
No, I'm not taking mine. No.
Okay. Well, keep talking then.
That's the good people from NSA.
Yeah, I was going to say somebody else is listening.
Yes, and maybe their blood pressure is going up.
Well, I hope so. You know, it'll add to the statistics of my listening audience. You know, thank you very much, NSA operatives. I know you're just doing your job.
We used to complain that the government didn't listen, and now they're listening. So, anyway,
what are we complaining about?
Exactly. What's wrong with us? Anyway,
you finally got your wish.
Yes, we wanted the government to listen to everything we said.
I think actually the surveillance agency should replace all political parties because they're the only ones that can be proven to actually listen to the people.
They have.
And are all of the time now. It was a time when it was sporadic. Now it's every time. Everybody in all of the, 24/7. So anyway,
Bert was too ill to get out of bed, and he was also too well to sleep all the time. So I gave him a book that he would ordinarily not read, and that was a book by Terry White, who was a guy who had been a CIA operative, ran drugs in Southeast Asia with
Air America,
Flying Tiger, and he had been hung out to dry by the CIA. He was abandoned, and he served 15 years in jail. Got out of jail, and he said, I don't have anything to protect, and I don't have any friends that I want to protect. Screw it, I'm going to tell the truth. And he wrote a book about the things that we're talking about now. And Bert will tell you the one thing in that book that convinced him that he had better start listening to what he was hearing, because he and Terry White were the only two people on the planet who knew the truth of this particular situation, the censor.
Well, this was during the period that I was in Vietnam, and I was the intelligence officer for the 25th Infantry Division. And the VC owned the night. When I first got to the division, everybody hunkered down at night. We put up the barbed wire. We went into foxholes. You didn't move. We operated in more than brigade-sized units. You never went out with a sort of a single squad or anything. Just the VC owned the night, period. And there were two trails that came into our area from where the VC were normally located. And I did the unit that I had, the 25th Infantry Division, did not have enough manpower to cover both trails at the same time. In other words, we were that short of manpower in the division, or in the folks that we had. And so how do you then tell the general officer, who's in the commanding officer of the division, where to put the troops? Well, what I did was I had a special censor. I only had one of them, and I put this
censor. Well, I think there's this piece missing here. There were only two of them in the world.
Yeah.
These were highly experimental.
They were all experimental. They were brand new, and I had one of them.
One of Bert's guys stole it for him.
Shouldn't have. I hope you didn't hear that. What she said was that one of my individuals who knew and understood the situation actually stole one of these sensors. Well, I should have turned it back in. I didn't. What I did was I put it on one of the trails. If the sensor went off, we knew the VC were on that trail. If it did not go off, we knew that they were on the other trail. So that way, I could tell the boss where to put the troops when they were needed in order to keep the VC, who controlled the night, totally controlled the night, keep them from overrunning us. Just that simple. And, oh, by the way, it worked, because we could move our forces to meet the enemy where the enemy was, and he didn't understand how we knew where he was.
And this thing had a code name that no one knew. Super secret.
That's correct. And one day when I was reading this book, here was this code word that no one else knew. And I said, holy smokes. The things
and
that I've been...
What he said in the book was that one of them disappeared one day and no one ever found it.
Yeah. And what happened was that I had a conversion, because instead of not listening to what this guy was saying in the book, I said, if that's true, then everything else this guy is saying is true. And so I had a totally complete turnaround in terms of my listening to what was being said in the book and to getting my eyes open and not being in the hole that I had been in, where I wasn't listening or seeing or understanding what was really going on. It was a great revelation for me as an individual, and it certainly was a boost in terms of my ability to do my duty, do my job. And, you know, I think I did a pretty good job while I was in Vietnam in combat. And I'm sure that that was part of the reason that I was promoted to a general officer, frankly.
But your conversion, lying in bed when you had the flu and realized that everything, all the factual information that I'd been giving you was to be considered very seriously, that was life-changing.
It was absolutely life-changing.
Did you go through that that really traumatic kind of depression stage that we all go through?
Oh yeah.
I used to scream at people and, like, you know, just be really, really upset about stuff.
My answer to that would have been, well, not so much. Rima's answer was, oh yes, he did. So.
Oh no, he did.
Bert's never screamed at anyone, but Bert went through what sometimes is called the dark night of the soul, because literally everything he believed
went out the window.
A sham.
Went out the window, right.
Yeah, it's like somebody, you just went through like 10 years of high school or something like that, and you get your high school diploma, and then they say, by the way, it doesn't matter anymore, and nothing we taught you was real. You know, just laugh in your face. You're like, you bastard! I invested everything in my entire life for you people. What are you doing?
Oh, you're absolutely correct. But there was another very interesting piece of all of this puzzle that came in, I'm not exactly sure of it was the time of 9/11. It was the time frame. But when 9/11 happened, Rima and I were in Hawaii attending a conference, and I don't know, 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning, one morning I got a call from one of my officers who had served under me. And I said, what in the hell are you calling at this time in the morning? And she said, the United States is at war. I said, come on, C, what have you been drinking? She said, the United States is at war. She said, turn on the television. I said, C, come on already. She said, turn on the television, sir, please. And I finally went over and I turned on the television, and sure enough, there was 9/11, one of the towers coming down. I said, well, that's a fictitious moment. Somebody's playing games. I switched channels, and there were the towers coming down. I switched channels, and there were the towers coming down. And I thought, oh boy. And I turned to Rima, and I said, you watch. I don't know how this got missed, but somebody missed the information, the intelligence on this, because there's no way that could have happened without somebody not doing their duty. Well, as you now know and you look back at, and I think everybody agrees now, the 9/11 towers were an inside job, and which is why all of the intelligence systems were turned off to allow it to happen. And another interesting aspect of that was that I was looking at some photographs of the Pentagon, which theoretically had been hit by a 757 airplane. And I looked at the structure of the Pentagon where the hole was, because this was a photograph, which incidentally you cannot find anywhere on the internet anymore. I looked at the hole, and I started to turn away, and I looked back at it. I said, something's wrong with that picture. I don't know what it is, but something is not right. And the more I looked, the more I realized that it was not, that the hole in the side of the Pentagon did not match the official story.
Had you seen those kind of holes before?
Well, let me tell you why I said that. First of all, the plane evaporated. Okay, now tell me how that happened.
It's such a bummer when they do that.
This crashed airplane evaporated, so there was no sign of it. And the only thing that was left, Vinny, the only thing that was in that hole was an engine. One engine.
A rotor.
And, oh, by the way, it was not an airplane engine. It was a rotor. Well, now, I've got a rotor in the hole. I don't have an airplane in the hole. The motor that is there, the rotor that is there, doesn't match an engine on any airplane, particularly a 757. So, what's wrong with this picture? And oh, by the way, I've got to tell you that one of my fortes when I was on active duty was photo interpretation. I was in charge of the Army Strategic Photo Interpretation Units on four different occasions as I went up the ranks. So I know a little bit. No, Vinny, I know a lot about photo interpretation. as a matter of fact, my first assignment was in the National Photo Interpretation Center. I was in charge of the Army's photo interpreters. Okay? I know a little bit about photo interpretation. And I looked at that hole, I looked at the rotor, and I said, something's wrong with this picture. The next thing is, where are the wing marks? The hole made in the Pentagon, the nose of this so-called airplane, would have penetrated far enough into the hole that there should have been a wing mark on the walls of the Pentagon. There was none. Okay? So you begin to put all of this together, and suddenly you realize that the story that is being told, the official story, is baloney. It is not true. Because if it had been true, there would have been an airplane in the Pentagon, or there would have been damaged airplane, or something in the hole of that Pentagon that would have matched the true story. There was zero.
There might have been something in the 52 surveillance cameras that the FBI confiscated the tapes and classified under national security. There might have been something on those that we could have interpreted, but we just don't know, ladies and gentlemen. We just don't know because they won't release the info.
They had all been turned off except one. There was one camera that either got forgotten or missed or something, because you can look into this camera. You can't find this on the internet anymore either. But here comes a streak into the Pentagon, okay? And when you looked at it, at first you said, well, that could be an airplane. But under scrutiny, the answer was, uh-uh. No, it wasn't. And then somebody painted or photoshopped a silhouette of a 757 on it. However, when you photoshopped it, it was not a 757. It was a missile.
It
matched the rotor.
It was quite an interesting missile, and the photograph, when you the photographic analysts who had sent us this very interesting video removed the pixelations of magic marker that were used to disguise what this thing really was. And what they discovered was the identification number of the missile, which was a depleted uranium nose cone missile launched from an airport in Colorado.
How about that?
I heard from, what was his name, Dmitry Khalazov, is a former Russian intelligence officer, that it was like a stolen, what's it called, anti-aircraft carrier missile that you fire from a sub that went missing from the Kursk that sank just before 9/11. The diver, Russian divers and stuff like that, they found the wreck of the Kursk, and the only thing that was missing from the whole thing was an anti-aircraft carrier missile, which is designed to fly basically at the water level along sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he reckoned, did it. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break with retired General Bert Stubblebine and his fabulous mistress, Dr. Rima Labo from the Dr. Rima TruthReports.com. Back in a minute, ladies. I almost said that F word there, but it wasn't folks. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guests are retired General Bert Stubblebine and Dr. Rima Labo. And we've gone from a number of different things about Bert's wake-up and 9/11 and the alleged and quote-unquote conspiracy theory around that. And in my opinion, almost everything that we've taught the definition to is probably more closer to the opposite of what we think the definition is than the definition itself. So, therefore, conspiracy theorist, meaning crazy person who doesn't know what they're talking about and completely makes stuff off of their head, is intelligent person who looks at facts, evidence, and makes conclusions based upon sound reasoning. And a mainstream person who is a skeptic, denies everything that is conspiratorial, is thought to be reasonable, intelligent, educated, capable of making the correct decisions based upon sound reasoning processes. So naturally, they're completely brainwashed morons who don't know nothing about anything. And that's why the whole world is currently pretty much screwed. Because everybody thinks it's going swimmingly. Isn't that about right? Oh, there's nothing going on here wrong, you know. Just tap on a wall, it's nice and solid, and it, boom, it's frickin' paper. Goes down to nothing. That's the whole world, ladies and gentlemen. It's a big gosh dang illusion. All constructed in a frickin' studio, in a frickin' boardroom, and everybody's in on it. Whether or not they even know that they're in on it. Everybody contributes in some way to the construction of reality. I would like to, in fact, rather than construct reality, I'd rather just reveal it to you so that we can cut out the frickin' middleman. The man behind the curtain, that is. General Stubblebine, retired, yes. Of course, back again. We're talking about the extermination of the human race that is going on here with military precision, mind control techniques, the media, everything. Every single form of science, religion, etc., in my opinion, has been weaponized.
Absolutely.
Well, it's being, I think it's in the, I don't know whether it has been or is being weaponized. I certainly would agree with is being. There are certainly pieces of it that have already happened, but I think they're more in process, frankly, Vinny.
So, could you explain to us the process then, as you believe it to be?
The process of
how things are being weaponized and how they're being used on the on the human race, just in general. You can use any specific kind of example you want as well.
Well, let me go back to the subject we were just talking about, the 9/11 thing. At the time, you know, I kind of believed the official story, but then the answer was, we got to go to war. We got to go to war. We have to go to war. We have to go to war. And my answer to that is, I mean, this was first choice, okay? We got to go to war. My answer is, that ought to be the last choice. War, always. If you've ever been in one, Vinny, you know that war is the last choice, not the first.
So what you're saying is that events and information were weaponized.
That's correct. And it was made to look like somebody else did it. So where do we go to war? Well, we went to war to get oil. So we suddenly ended up in the Iraq-Iran neighborhood. And we were there not to protect the people, not to protect the government. We were there to get the oil. So now, as we continue to look at what's going on, I believe that there is another agenda. And this may stop people cold, Vinny, and I don't know what it's going to do to your heart, but I think that there is a real effort being made to create a smaller population, in other words, depopulate the world. And we are called, we who don't need to populate this world, are called useless eaters. I don't know about you, Vinny, whether you're a useless eater, but I'm sure I am one, and I'm sure Rima is one, because we don't fit into their particular code exactly. So I'm sure that both of us would be called useless eaters and would have to be part of the depopulation. Well, how much depopulation? It looks like the number that has been settled on is 90% of depopulation. So 10% of somebody of the population is going to be allowed to live. The other 90 has got to go. So,
may I make a point?
Yes.
Thank you. I rarely ask. But it's because we've got company in the computer here. When we first started talking about this 10 years ago, because the Natural Solutions Foundation is 10 years old, just using the term genocide was enough to cause people to run screaming and question your sanity as they left your vicinity, because you couldn't say that. It was an unthinkable reality. How could anyone put forth the notion that the globalist community, the United Nations and the other big guys, our friends, were going to even consider such a thing. Now it has become not only a truism, but something and something that people can think about, but the other side has become so bold as to admit it without even seeming to be ashamed. They started officially declaring the necessity of global depopulation on 7 billion day in October 2011, when they said the 7 billionth baby on the face of the earth, the 7 billionth person, has been born today, and look at her, isn't she cute? And now, as the chairman, as the head of the Security Council, Ban Ki-moon, said, now we have to get serious about population control. And what that means is global programs like geoengineering, global programs like vaccination, which is a sterility and infertility delivery system, and worse.
And I might add, do not vaccinate yourself or your children.
Ever.
Period. Ever. Do not do it.
My mother was of the same opinion. She was a nurse, and she didn't vaccinate any of us.
Well,
good
don't.
For you. You
know, nurses and pediatricians and doctors are among the lowest percentage vaccinated people. They know. And by the way, you can go to tinyurl.com, Autism Inside Job, to access a 3.5-hour, very, very heavily researched webinar on the use, the intentional use of vaccines to create what Aldous Huxley called the Delta Workers. This is intentional. Autism is no accident and is very useful to the globalists who want technicians and servants. They don't want you and me.
So how about that?
Well, this is not news to me. I got over this kind of shock watching Alex Jones documentaries in the most powerful, horrific way possible.
Yes, and then you got angry, and then you got active.
I got angry, I got active, and stopped listening to Alex Jones because I found I was angry enough by myself.
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting because I, when I first heard about, you know, the 90%, I said, there's no way that you can depopulate a world by 90%. There's no way that can happen.
You have to work very, very hard.
Very hard.
Well, actually, I think it's not so much that you've got to be working so much as hard, is that you've got to be working at all angles. Okay?
Well,
imagine for a moment that from birth to death, however long that lifespan is, you will be 100% saturated in every environment that you're likely to go in and everything that you're likely to pass through your body, whether that be the digestive system or the lungs, completely flooded with toxins that will cause illness and death.
You got it. But let me give you another very interesting thought, okay? Why did Fukushima suddenly explode and send gyres and gushes of radioactive material continually? You know, Vinny, it's going on and on and on. There is no way to cap it. There is no way to stop it. It will go on. And the radiation, okay, now they're here. This is a geyser at a nuclear storage plant.
No. It's the nuclear facility. It's not just the storage plant.
Well,
it's
the facility.
Power plants and the storage facilities.
But here is this geyser going into the air, carrying radioactive material up into the sky, into the air. The air flows from west to east 9 months out of the year. 3 months out of the year, it goes the other way around. So the wind is now blowing all of this radioactivity, strontium and cesium and beryllium and whatever, is in the air. is coming toward the North America and has long since passed the west coast of the United States and also the east coast. And we know that because Dr. Rima and I have, with our own Geiger counter, been on the west coast, measured the levels, been on the east coast, measured the levels there. They're twice as high on the west coast as on the east coast, and all of them are off the chart. So here is an accident that now is putting radiation all the way around the world and into the lungs of all of the people, into the water, so they're drinking the water, into the soil, so the food that they're eating is being harvested from soil that is radioactive, and what is going to happen to the population?
Well, let me add something else there. We've been tracking this. It's not just our own Geiger counter, because, of course, we can't be everywhere. But we've been tracking this. We noted with interest, of course, that the United States and Canada shut down their tax.
Shut them off. Shut them off.
But what we see is that the radiation is not only as, well, first of all, TEPCO is completely committed to lies of every sort and magnitude. And the Japanese government, as I'm sure your listeners know, has made it a crime against the state to discuss any negative information whatsoever of any sort.
They can't even utter a word about it.
The doctors are not permitted to indicate when people get diabetes or cancer or heart disease or thyroid cancer.
It's all called stress.
It's all called stress. And by the way, the number of thyroid cancer cases in Fukushima district has gone up 50% in the last 60 days. So that's very interesting. Now, what that means for somebody who says that, if they're in Japan, is that they're subject to a conviction for crimes against the state by revealing state secrets, and they can go to jail for up to 10 years, which means nobody's allowed to know. The fact of the matter is that the Japanese government has been given free large amounts of substances with which to protect the people who have been exposed. And I know because one of my friends donated a huge amount of something that was used successfully at Chernobyl to help people from, protect people from various cancers. And that substance, which was legal at that time in Japan, it was already sold in Japan, that substance was put into a warehouse and is still there today, impounded, because using it would imply that there were problems with radiation, and we couldn't have that, could we? At the same time that the Japanese government has been given information by us and by others about practical ways to remediate the radiation levels using novel technology, patented technology, the Japanese government has stonewalled this information, refused to acknowledge that it has been given this information, and indeed has acted like it never heard of any problem, let alone any solution to the problem. At the same time, the Japanese government is pushing ahead with the 2020 Tokyo
Olympics
Games. And so we are asking people to take action and to write to the head of the International Olympic Committee and demand an international impartial investigation to see whether it's safe to bring athletes and coaches and spectators and workers who will construct the facilities to Tokyo. The answer, of course, is no, it's not safe. But we think that this is a way to pressure both the International Olympic Committee and the Japanese government into behaving at least moderately reasonably. Not very reasonably, but at least moderately reasonably. And so we would like people to go to tinyurl.com/Fukushima Hope. That's Fukushima Hope. That's one of our tiny URL action campaigns. And it is only through massive voices that public policy becomes ashamed to be seen and changes. And we've had success doing that in several places around the world, Vinny. So that's tinyurl.com/Fukushima Hope. Fukushima is helping to destroy the world, but as General Burt's new book, free for anyone who goes to the website, as General Burt's new book shows, the levels of radiation in the United States from U.S. nuclear reactors are higher than they are in Fukushima City.
How about that?
Yep. You're getting it from all fronts, aren't you, America?
Yep. You got it. That's exactly right.
You have the link that people can go directly to. I sent it to you before the program. But if people want to download the book, we're happy to have them do that. They can go. You want to give them the...
Dr. Rima, that's D-R-R-I-M-A, DrRimaTruthReports.com. And then you got to click on the...
tab that says blog,
and you can download the book.
It's a free book, and with it we give people a complimentary subscription to our email newsletter, which has tremendous amounts of information. I think you must rather like it because you keep inviting us back to be on your show.
Well, you know, you always present interesting information that scares the bejesus out of me. And, you know, there's a philosophy from my good friend Penny Bright. You can do one thing every day that scares you. And I probably do it only once a week, you know. I'm just trying to, you know. Yeah, I'm not as hard a woman as she is. The other element here is we're talking about the depopulation and... sort of like talking to, what's his name, Kevin Galilee the other day. He's like the Deepak Chopra of depopulation, or Depop Chopra, I call him. And he's been exposing the depopulation methodologies that have been laid down from the UN since the late 40s. I think it was about 1945 or so they kind of like sat down and started really talking about this, about flooding the entire food supply with estrogen mimickers and BPA containing plastics and things of this nature. Like in the 70s, pretty much you couldn't find stuff in glass bottles.
Now it's GMOs.
Well, only part of it, because they're still doing that, plus they've got the GMOs and the radiation.
The point that I wanted to make was not just the methodologies by which they're physically killing people off, but they're also creating a new religion so that people are happy about being killed off. It's called the New Age religion. Now, it is what you resist persists. That's their philosophy. And I had a realization. I don't know if you guys watch Star Trek at all, but there's a race in Star Trek called the Borg. And their philosophy is resistance is futile.
Whoa. That one's a new one. I hadn't heard that.
We don't have a TV. We don't even own a TV.
Well, let me explain, because through creative analogy, the Borg race on Star Trek really much mimics the New Age movement. Dig this. They have a collective mind. They live in giant floating cities that are in the shape of a cube. They absorb other races' biological material and matter and history into their data banks and assimilate it into the collective.
Wow. Okay.
It sounds about just like almost every New Age frickin' pain in the ass person I've ever had an argument with. Oh, you're being too negative. Resistance is futile.
You know, very clearly, I'm sure, who financed the New Age. There's a new excellent documentary on Gnostic Media by Jan Irwin.
Jan Irwin.
Talking about precisely this. and how very, very carefully it was created. The whole New Age philosophy was created by the CIA, by Edwin Bernays, Timothy Leary, Terence McKenna. These were all finally later admitted CIA agents, self-admitted. This is not something that someone else says must be true. This is what they admit. And the interviews are there in Jan's excellent, excellent new documentary. We're talking about an intentional social manipulation to achieve desired ends, which include passivity, lie down and die. William Styron wrote the book Lie Down in Darkness. Forget about the darkness, just lie down and die.
You know, you can't look at these kind of ideologies and can't think, oh, you know what? I don't think any of these people came up with this originally, you know? Oh, suddenly I believe in collectivism and solipsism that I imagine and create absolutely everything that's in front of me. Yeah, I'm that powerful. I'm God. Yeah, you came up with that idea all by yourself, didn't you, buddy? You weren't watching a whole bunch of silly little motivational videos by crazy gurus who have sex with like 9 girls a night or something like that, saying it makes them spiritually enlightened, you know? Pardon?
That was John Kennedy, the sleeping thing.
Okay. I didn't know if there was much actual sleeping involved, but...
How tired Marilyn Monroe looked?
Anyway,
moving right along.
She'd be walking bow-legged. And the... break is now coming up, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. You can check that out and also check out our sponsors and supporters and so on and so forth. We have books there, the crowdfunding revolution, or is it crowdsourcing revolution? I forget which. I'm terrible with this. And also The Range of Illusion, a fictional novel, first in the series by author B. Holmes. And check out the High Tea Cafe as well, who are a consistent regular donor to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, as well as the Gourmet Soap Kitchen in Wagga Wagga. And don't forget about Blue Shield as well. Get some wireless protection devices. Oh, you know, if you've got to protect yourself against the New World Order agenda, you've got to protect yourself in every single way. You've got to be like a cactus covered in spines from every single frickin' direction, because that's how many directions they're attacking you at right now. You can at least protect yourself against, like, EMF radiation by getting yourself a Blue Shield, and you can at least protect yourself against mind washing and brain control programming by listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Because it's good programming, all right? I'm trying to convince you, through subtle mind control techniques, that you're being brainwashed by scumbaggery. And hoping you'll do something about it. We'll be right back.
Came in, the air went out, and every shadow filled up with doubt. I don't know who you think you are, but before the night is through, I wanna do bad things with you.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. We're broadcasting from New Zealand in the Fukushima South Pacific, the shining jewel, the Cayman Islands, island chain. It's beautiful because we have a Prime Minister that used to work for the Federal Reserve Bank for 2 years in charge of the European bond and derivatives trade, and then got elected in 2008 for a blue political party on a platform of change, and then got the country into more debt than every single prime minister, leader of our country, ever did, combined. Does that sound familiar, Americans? I think it sounds familiar. You know, maybe I'm wrong here. Maybe I'm just making connections that don't exist. But anyway, we try to make jokes about this because, you know, life's pretty harsh. And sometimes you've got to have a laugh just to realize, you know, what you're still fighting for, you know? So I come up with really crappy jokes. Like, for example, what was it? Oh, yeah. Hey,
How do Spanish musicians catch fish? They cast a net.
That was really terrible,
Vinny. Well, you know, my jokes are of two strains. Either A1, you will cackle in the first instance, or you will groan and then cackle privately later on.
Beautiful.
Laugh with me or at me. As long as you're laughing, it helps to produce endorphins.
Yes.
Which are radioprotective to a small degree.
And interestingly, I'm delivering that via radio.
There you are, and we're protected.
Now, speaking of the kind of protection that we might need, what is it that people need to be conscious about Fukushima? You were mentioning over the break a kitty litter or something like that.
Oh, this is a wonderful story. If you are a fan of world-destroying stupidity, this would be number one on your hit parade. The WIPP underground storage facility near Carlsbad, New Mexico. Carlsbad is famous for its caves. That facility has been used as the United States' only deep underground storage facility for its high-level nuclear waste from Los Alamos nuclear facility, which is touted, at least, as one of the world's great nuclear research and death-dealing factories in the world. It's really quite renowned. Well, the Carlsbad Caverns were selected as a great place to store this high-level nuclear waste, very rich in plutonium, which will be radioactive for the next 4.5 billion years. Million, that's with an M, before one half-life has gone on. Multiply that by 8 for the amount of time it will take until it's relatively safe to be around. So it's pretty dangerous for a pretty long time. We're talking about a very, very radioactive area filled with hundreds and hundreds of casks, very, very well-constructed, secure, in explosion and fireproof casks of plutonium from the nuclear manufacturing process at Los Alamos. Well, you have to keep plutonium dry. You wouldn't want it to get wet for a whole variety of reasons that would make you unhappy should your plutonium get wet. One of those is fire. Nuclear fire is a bad thing. And another one is explosions. So they decided to keep the geniuses at Los Alamos, decided to keep the casks dry, to keep the plutonium in them dry with, I kid you not, kitty litter. And they stuffed kitty litter into the casks when they were filling them with highly, highly, highly radioactive plutonium. Nobody thought to test whether kitty litter was sort of an appropriate material. They said, well, sure it is. You know, it absorbs moisture. That's what it does. And so they stuffed kitty litter into the barrels and they buried them. And they have very, very elaborate forklifts and moving systems and protective gear and yada, yada in the world's most advanced underground high-level radioactive waste storage facility. And the casks are now exploding and burning because, the geniuses figure, the kitty litter doesn't withstand high-level radiation real well. Kind of breaks down, changes, transmutes, and becomes explosive. And so that's what you have. You have these casks specially made to withstand fire and explosion, exploding and spewing. No one knows how much. Now, no one knows how many of these casks are going to follow suit and explode, like this one, like the first ones have done. Nobody knows, because they sort of didn't test the system. They just assumed that kitty litter was one of those magic things that you could rely on forever for the safety of the world.
Well, now we can rely on it forever, but not for the world's safety.
Yes, exactly, precisely.
Maybe so, for depopulation safety.
It's like, man, you were half right. Okay, give the man some credit where it's due.
So no one is talking much about this, certainly not in the United States, probably not anywhere. It's as if there were a blackout. My goodness, would you expect that the media might be controlled by the nuclear mafia? Nah, never thought of that. And the danger, according to one official who asked not to be identified, right, he has to keep his job, the danger is so incalculable that they have no way of estimating how much damage it could do if these casks keep burning and exploding, which is what they expect for it to do. It could take about 50 years, he said, for them to come up with a solution.
Well, how about that?
Well, you know, what kind of solution are they going to propose? I mean, I heard this crazy story coming out of Fukushima. I think their great, brilliant idea was to wait for it. That's right. Put a giant polystyrene dome over it.
Well, they also, at Fukushima, are putting a great big ice wall. They're going to lower the temperature of the land around one of the reactors, just one of the reactors, to 30 degrees below zero Celsius. And the frozen water will keep the groundwater from seeping in, except for the fact that that's kind of not where the groundwater is seeping in, and the fact that this will make the area so much heavier that the Fukushima facility, which is already sinking into the aquifer below it, which is where the groundwater is coming from, the Fukushima facility will sink even faster, making the groundwater even more contaminated, and contaminating, by the way, even more heavily the water that Tokyo drinks, speaking of the Tokyo Olympics, by the way. So their solution was approved 1 year ago this past week. And then this week, the Japanese Atomic Energy Commission said, wait a minute, hang on, that won't work. And it's going to make things a lot worse. So although you have now spent $285 million on beginning construction on this thing, which has never been done before, by the way, this is totally experimental, we have just withdrawn our approval. We don't think this is a good idea. Don't do that. That was this week's comedy show at Fukushima.
Well, it's almost like, it's Alice in Wonderland all over again, isn't it?
except that I think the end result is not going to be very Wonderland.
Well, I think it would be more like a little bit off with their heads.
I was going to say, in Alice in Wonderland, they cut off one person's head at a time. This is a bit more mechanized.
Yeah. It's more efficient, really.
It really is, yes.
Yeah. Well, who's the Queen of Hearts in this debacle, then?
Ah, who is the Queen of Hearts?
Well, that's very interesting, because just you go back to the depopulation thing that we were talking about earlier. Let's assume that the 90% goes, the useless eaters go, and the 10% remain. Fukushima continues. The radiation levels continue to rise, go up, 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 up. So how does the 10% have any chance of surviving in an atmosphere that is totally poisonous in terms of the nuclear radiation? Well, that's very interesting, because I don't know whether you know this, Vinny, but there are deep underground cities all over the United States.
Well, all over the world, actually.
Well, and they have been built for a long time.
A lot of them are connected as well by these high-speed Mach 2 trains or something like that.
Right, that's right. And so now the question is, why are the underground cities there, all connected by the high-speed trains, and you don't build a city in 2 days? These cities have been under construction for a long, long time. Okay?
Let me give you a proposal, if I may.
Well, wait a minute. I got to ask the question first. And the question is, why? What did these people know way back when, because you don't build, again, you don't build a city in 2 days, to have built all of these cities, connected them with high-speed trains for a real purpose. What is that purpose? Why are they there? What did they know? Oh, did they know about Fukushima 10 years ago?
Well, they've been building them for a lot longer than 10 years.
Or 20 years.
Or maybe a catch-all contingency plan. Maybe they had all bunch of plans. Any of them could have gone wrong in a number of different ways. There could have been uprisings or something like that. And they need a place to escape to permanently where they could never be reached, either by disease, radiation, or the people they're trying to kill them with.
Well, my supposition is that they would escape to the underground cities if everything went right for them, not if everything went wrong. They are prepared to live a very, very long time, very, very separate from any connection with
might
the surface.
Might I make an observation? The people that would be coming into these cities would probably be the elite, right? So they'd be the most ruthless criminals, murderers, pedophiles, rapists, etc. that the world has ever known in the thousands of years of human debauchery and scumbaggery. And they want to lock themselves together underground in the dark with these people forever. have you ever, you know, I mean, it's like, it reminds me of this story of the, what was it? There was some ancient fable about this book in Rome that supposedly told the future. And the emperor at the time was so obsessed with finding this book, he sacrificed thousands of men trying to look for it, and they finally found it. And they opened it, and in its pages it revealed that Rome was going to suffer a terrible plague, that all their grain would go rotten and that they would starve. So the emperor took measures to prevent this. He gathered all the grain around Rome and had it under guard 24 hours in this giant granary. And what they didn't do is keep it under guard by people who knew how to keep grain properly, and it started to go moldy.
They put kitty litter in the plutonium casks, and it exploded and destroyed the world.
See, so sometimes the very measures by which we take to prevent a terrible future are, in fact, the very causation of the terrible future.
You got it.
Well, yes, and there are many stories that indicate that the thing that you do to prevent the thing that you fear is in fact the thing that precipitates the very dreaded event. Absolutely. This is an ancient archetypal wisdom, if you will.
Well, we're going to create GMOs because we're afraid of starving to death. Really, what do GMOs do? Oh, they make you all go sterile and die of extinction? Oh, okay.
you got it.
And we can patent it.
You got it. And we'll make a lot of money while we're doing it.
But it'll kill Africa first. So these people.
There's an old, if I might say so, there's an old jazz piano thing, and what was it? Doctor something. I forget his name. Louisiana blues pianist from way back in the day. What was it? Sorry, Clint Eastwood was interviewing him, and telling him about this. This last couple of lines of this one song that stuck with him his entire life, and it says, "If you get you some money, you'll spend it as fast as you can." I said, if you get you some money, go spend it as fast as you can. You can't take none of it with you. I ain't seen a funeral followed by an Arbin van yet.
Well, I believe...
That's great.
I believe now, and I have no hard evidence for this, Vinny, but I do believe that their intention was to quite literally destroy the planet's life capacity until they chose to put it back together again. And of course, this is completely insane.
Obviously, these idiots were not taught Humpty Dumpty in the nursery.
Precisely. And that is the cause of all our troubles today, the lack of Humpty Dumpty-tude.
Now, does that mean that because of a lack of Humpty Dumptitude that we're in for a time of moral turpitude?
I think we have come to a time of moral turpitude with certitude.
It Certainly wouldn't hurt it, dude.
Mm. But let's try to keep it away from being a little bit rude. I was going to say as well, Rima, because both of you seem to have, shall we say, aged a lot better than I have, and you've lived a lot more years than I have. Well, I seem to be getting worse as time goes on.
A lot more time to age gracefully compared to you. You're just beginning to decay.
See, you guys are turning into wine. I feel like I'm just skipping the whole drunken process and just going straight for the vinaigrette. In fact, do you know what you call a salad dressing that makes you feel bad about yourself?
What do you call salad dressing that makes you feel bad about yourself?
A vinaigrette.
Good. Bueno.
You need to lay off them cheap cigars, Vinny.
Yeah. I would like to also talk about the other elements of the depopulation agenda, namely the chemtrail one. I just had a article posted on my timeline by Occupy Corporatism, the wonderful Suzanne Poser, a mutual acquaintance. UCLA, quote, use alumina in atmosphere to reduce climate change, in the top US World News Today.
To reduce what?
To reduce climate change. So UCLA has come out and they say we want to start spraying the atmosphere with aluminium particulates from aircraft in order to reduce the effect that solar radiation is having on the planet. Now, yep, now I bet a major university telling people to spray the atmosphere with aluminium chemtrails still doesn't count as quote-unquote evidence to the average, in quotation marks, science-loving chemtrail deniers, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Well, what happens when you breathe one piece of that aluminum that comes down from the chemtrails? You put it in your body. What do you think is going to happen to your body, Vinny?
A little bit. Well, I don't know, because I would presume the Alzheimer's I'd get from it would be so bad that I wouldn't forget that I would forget what it did to my body.
You might.
Maybe.
But anybody who was doing enough heavy metal detoxification would remember. So you're safe. Somebody out there knows. And we have to remember that aluminum is not only pro-inflammatory for the brain and for the heart and for the lungs and the kidneys and so on, and aluminum not only depresses the immune system, but aluminum is synergistically toxic by a factor of about 1,000 with fluoride. And so the fluoridated water and the aluminum act together so that each one is between 1,000 and 2,000 times more toxic than the same dose would be alone. But there's a little bit more, and that is that aluminum is such a good pro-oxidant that it causes things to catch on fire, like forests, for instance, that would not actually catch on fire at this under the same conditions without the pro-incendiary aluminum impact. So that's really wonderful. What we're doing is heating up the globe, and not preventing global warming. We're heating up the globe, and oh, by the way, we're making it more flammable, and we're making the soil, of course, less fertile, and we're making you less fertile, and we're making you more stupid so that you don't know that you're less fertile. And oh, by the way, if that's not enough, we'll inject it into you too.
On top of that, I believe, I think it might have been Dan Wigington that was telling me that the aluminum and the barium and the strontium and these other particulates that they've currently been spraying also have a detrimental effect on ozone-atom connections. So it's actually depleting the ozone layer, allowing even more radiation and heat to come through, which basically it makes the temperature fluctuate much more, because the ozone normally stops a bulk of that heat and also stops a lot of the variation that happens within the atmosphere, and that's what gives us a stable climate. So in order to protect us from solar radiation, they're breaking up the very thing that actually protects us from massive temperature fluctuations because of solar radiation.
Dane was, once again, I love Dane. Dane was my guest last Thursday on the Dr. Rima Truth Reports, And one of the things that Dane has said for a very long time, and I hope everybody knows his website and goes there regularly. It's called geoengineeringwatch.org. Very important website. Dane Wigington is telling it the way it really, really is. Clearly, calmly, and with absolute certainty and gravity that this is cataclysmic unless we stop it. Which is why, by the way, we have another action item, tinyurl.com/stopgeoengineering. Dane was saying that if we stop it now, not next week, but now, we have a chance, not a certainty, but a chance that the planet might recover. The only way it's going to stop now is if enough people raise their voices and become absolutely audible to the powers that be. I don't care why you're doing this. I don't care that the program has run away with itself and you don't know what to do. I don't care that your intention is depopulation or isn't. The fact is you must stop destroying the capacity of the planet to support life now. And you must stop all of the geoengineering practices, which are not limited to spraying crap in the sky, spraying synthetic DNA in the sky, spraying self-assembling nanobots from the sky, spraying aluminum, barium, strontium, thorium, radioactive elements like uranium. That's not the only thing that's geoengineering this planet, which is why Bert was talking about neo-geoengineering. You want to talk a little about that, Bert?
I'm not sure at this stage of the game.
Well, at this point, the game might be over soon, so I say, let it rip, son.
What we're talking about is the growing of GMO crops, for instance, which do not sequester carbon the way non-GMO crops do, and therefore geoengineer. The nuclear reactors, which God knows are geoengineering and bioengineering, the actual spraying itself, these large-scale programs that are designed for death.
Well, the one thing is for sure that the chemtrails are not designed for your health. I'll tell you that. I mean, you look at the crisscross pattern of these things in the sky, you watch them spread out, then you understand that all of the things that they're spraying and are putting on you, that you're breathing or eating the food that's grown in the soil that gets all of this stuff from the air. When you think about the aluminum and the strontium and the radiation levels of things that are there, when you know that it only takes one single atom of cesium-137 in your body and you're dead, you know, or plutonium or cobalt, it doesn't make any difference. You get one atom of this radioactive materials in your body and your body is out of luck. And
the mayor of Fubata, Fukushima Daiichi, sits in two towns. One of them is called Fubata. And the mayor of Fubata is a very unusual fellow. He's telling the truth. He's saying our children are dying. We're dying. The radiation levels are killing us. Please, please help us. And other city council and mayoral-type people are beginning to speak out in Japan. And they're not even talking about the radiation that's coming down from the chemtrails. They're not talking about the metals and the synthetic biology. So it doesn't matter which part of the converging cataclysm you look at. The fact is that it's all deforming the Earth and killing us, and it all has to stop. Can I give the the action item again?
One last time, and then we're going to go to break.
All right. It's Bert, why don't you do it?
Well, the action item is tinyurl.com/stopgeoengineering. So you really need to pay attention. And let me give you an example of what's happening in Fukushima. In the end of December of 2013, there were only 17 children in Fukushima that had thyroid cancer. In March of 2014, okay, just 3 months, there were 50 children with thyroid. That's three times the what had happened, and that's three times in just 3 months. Now, by the way, there were 43 other children that had thyroid lumps. They hadn't even diagnosed what the lumps were at this stage of the game.
Well, they refused to diagnose them.
Yeah. So here, I mean, here is a perfect example of what happens with when you have radiation. And if you go to Miami, Florida, the radiation levels there have been at 400 nanosieverts and
for over a year.
It's been over 400, and no one there is even thinking about what the dangers and damage is being done by the radiation in Miami that has come from Fukushima.
And from Turkey Point nuclear reactor. You need to know that the internationally agreed upon evacuation level
is 300.
And Miami's been at
over 400.
More than a year.
Yeah, I recall when Fukushima first happened, this wave of radioactive stuff started setting off all the alarms and everything on the California coastline. So then I think the US government said, you know what, let's just raise the level of available radiation, you know, the kind of levels that we really need. You know, this is actually healthy. This is good. And it's like 10 times the normal rate and tripled the amount stillborn and all of this kind of stuff a month following Fukushima. It's just absolutely crazy. Unfortunately, we do have to go to a break ladies and gentlemen.
And then they stop reporting.
Yeah. First, they make it much higher levels than you can have, and then the levels go even higher than that, and then they just stop reporting them altogether.
They stop reporting, that's right.
Yeah.
Don't talk.
Yeah. New Zealand's got a similar thing. We stopped testing for radioactive particles in our seawater and imports like halfway through last year or something like that when they just started to get real bad. So, yeah, it's about right. Everybody manages these crises in much the same way. It's probably because they're trying to manage the crises instead of solving them. You'll listen to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y because it's the most important question in Eastwood, as in go ahead, make my news. You can check out the book sponsors that we have, the crowdfunding revolution by Kevin Lawton and Dan Marum, and The Range of Illusion, A Province's Novel by B. Holmes. Also check out our other sponsors, Blue Shield, to protect yourself from a little bit of EMF radiation. Probably won't protect you from cesium-130, but hey, you try, you do what you can. And then also the other sponsors, Volcania Coffee, that's going to be supporting both myself and the People's Voice in the UK by giving us the profits from that company to support our fight against the global scumbaggery syndicate that would make it impossible for anybody to have an independently running business in an ethical way once the New World Order take over commerce globally with their trade deals and so on and so forth and global government. Plus check out the High Tea Cafe, wonderful place on Portage Road in New Lynn. You can click on the banner at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and go straight to their Facebook page. They'll tell you when they are open. And also, if you're in Australia, or even if you just really want to get yourself some dang fine soap, go to the Gourmet Soap Kitchen little banner there on thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and wagga wagga and get yourself some of that stuff, especially the cinnamon and oat soap. I love that stuff. It's very invigorating. We'll be right back. We'll Ladies and gentlemen, with retired General Bert Stubblebine and Dr. Reimer Labo. It's quite a prestigious thing, you know, you can just put up on Facebook, "By the way, I'm interviewing a former general today." And, you know, I'm sure you get that a lot.
I love it.
Okay, so, final segment, and we may be coming into the final days of the human race. However, there's an old saying, and I think it's held true mostly for my life. It says, "One door closes, a window opens." I always believe in the brighter side, you know, like hope, faith, etc., whatever it is. Hold on to something.
Incidentally, I agree with you totally. We cannot give up. We cannot even look like we're giving up, Vinny. In order to solve this, we have to be of positive mind, positive intentionality, and we must take the various actions that allow us to go the course and do the thing that needs to be done to help the entire world.
May I make a slightly different point?
Maybe.
Thank you. I think hope is silly.
I didn't say anything about hope.
I think hope is a weak word, and I think hope is next door to the New Age passivity that we were talking about. The fact of the matter is that we have all the power. They have the appearance of power. This is a true Wizard of Oz situation. They claim levels of power that are supposed to intimidate us. In fact, every single time that our voices become audible to these global scumbags, they back off. They step back. They do come back again. They will find another way to try to make their will assert itself. But when our voices are raised in sufficient number, then we, in fact, control what they do. And we can force them back from their plans, and we can, in fact, seize what is rightfully ours, which is control of the situation. So I don't think we can hope that a window opens. I think that we have the key to the window, and it's called a computer mouse. And that computer mouse is so powerful that, indeed, they want to take the computer system, the Internet, away from us because we've used it too well for their liking. We've used it too effectively. We've forced them to come into the light of day, which, like the rotten, corrupt mushrooms they cannot tolerate. And so we have the power, and we've demonstrated it. We've demonstrated it in the United States when we stopped the already approved and funded mandated swine flu program by the volume of our voices, 3.5 million emails to every decision maker involved in that heinous decision in 11 days, 3.5 million emails to each of them, and they backed off. Here in Chile, where General Bert and I are living in order to provide clean, low radiation food to the North American continent, we found out that they were just about to turn Chile into an agricultural twin of the United States, and we said no. And again, the magic number seemed to be 3.5 million Chileans. That's a lot more percentage of Chileans than it is of the United States. But 3.5 million Chilean emails, and two governments dropped Monsanto's wet dream for Chile. They'll be back. But that's real power, Vinny, the power that you have to make information available, the power that we have to make information available, rests solely in the power of the people to make their will known. If you do that, we win. If you don't do that, you will be depopulated, you will be enslaved, and you will die.
And Dr.
It's due in no small part to the specific contributions of people who have leadership characteristics and the ability to organize others into strong, basically fighting units in a information/protesting/advocacy sense of the word. And I agree, Reema, those who trust to hope only for hope in and of itself are basically delusional and think that they don't have any power. My interpretation of hope is much like that of the reason why they gave a hobbit the ring of power to put into a Mount Doom. For a lack of choice and a lack of options, not really much hope, just a fool's hope and the willingness to die in order to back it up.
Exactly. Now, we don't have to die if these bastards can be controlled, and it's up to us to control them because nobody else is going to. It's easy to say, well, you know, it's all too big for my little head. Well, then your little head is going to be quite a dead head.
Well, and she's right. Actually, you're both right, because hope is a very weak word. The key to all of this is exactly what she said. And from a military perspective, it's called a principle of war. The principle of war is called mass. We need masses of people who are all saying no. They don't need a weapon except their mouth. And their mouth has got to say, don't you dare. No, no, no. Enough people do that, they'll go away or back off. They're not going to go away, but they certainly will back off. And we've seen it happen over and over and over again every time we've needed an action where we needed the people to support an action and that essentially telling the system what to do.
Now, I have a bit of a crazy mind because when you said people can use their mouth as a weapon, I thought every single time somebody shakes a politician's hand, they try to bite off one of his fingers. That'll make people not want to be the Prime Minister very long.
Try signing a
executive order with no fingers, bitch.
Is that really the part that he's using? I'm a physician, and it seems to me that that would be a very, very irresponsible thing to advise because you'd be...
I'm not advising. I was just joking because I thought it would be funny.
You'd be poisoning the people who bit the fingers because the politicians are so damn toxic.
I mean, you know, sometimes you've got to swallow the poison with the antidote, you know.
I love it.
And the message to the politician would be, now it's time to feed the hand that bites you.
I mean, hey, and the politicians wouldn't be able to continue giving you the finger.
No, that's right.
You know, you've got to disable your enemy's weapons, yo.
That's correct.
The pen is mightier than the sword. And it's just like in Starship Troopers. Sir, I don't understand. Who needs a knife in a nuke fight anyway? Ceasefire. Put your hand on that wall, trooper. Put your hand on that wall! He walks over to him very slowly. Oh, God, yeah. The enemy cannot push your button if you disable his hand. Whoosh! Ow! Medic!
I love it.
So, okay. Yeah, there we go. A bit of joke, comic relief, and relief of having digits as well. Hey, and in fact, speaking of digits, somebody was telling me before, I don't know what your guys' opinion is of Anonymous, but this guy told me that if Anonymous was totally real... And I don't like it when people start off with this, you know, they start off with logic instead of their grammar. He said, if Anonymous was real, why wouldn't they just drain all the bank accounts of the elite? You know, just hack in, empty all their bank accounts to nothing, then they'd have nothing left, right? Yeah. I thought, well, what an interesting point.
If Anonymous was real and they were taking orders from me, is what this guy was saying.
Yeah.
Because this is how I would do it. Well, maybe Anonymous has another way to do it. And to the extent that Anonymous has proved a threat, God love them. I think it's great.
I absolutely believe so, too. I mean, we've had Anonymous help us out just because, like, I had this dude, Pete Santilli, who was like, stole my name, Guerrilla Media, turned it into Guerrilla Media Network. A whole debacle. There's plenty of info on it online, but without us even asking, Pete Santilli threatened Anonymous, said, hack me, go right ahead. And they did. and they leaked a document that he sent to the FBI when we were exposing him for derailing the trucker's ride for the Constitution, when he seized control of it, took over their Facebook page that had 200 plus thousand likes, and then renamed it Guerrilla Media Network under him.
Wow.
Yeah. And he sent a letter to the FBI complaining about me and Suzanne Posel exposing him. And he says, if I'm exposed, I'll expose you, you know, and I'll tell my story and my version of the events. He's like threatening the Department of Justice. And they're just going to... It's like, this guy can't be that bright, bro.
Oh, my.
Wow.
That's quite a story.
Yeah, and Anonymous approached us. I mean, afterwards, it was like Pete alleges we approached him. We hadn't even known that he was hacked until like a couple of days after it happened, when people were directing us to this, and they go, oh my God, this guy fracked over Vinny Eastwood real bad. Maybe we could send him this info and see what he can do with it. And boy, did we do a lot with it. Yeah, about half the people that hear about Pete Santilli now thinks he's corrupt. About a third of them don't know, and about maybe 17% of the knuckle draggers and mouth breathers out there that listen to talk radio and think that their truth is still believe every word that comes out of his psychopathic mouth.
So you've actually helped him get more followers, huh? 17% seems like a high number.
Yeah, I mean, it may have done. But, you know, everybody has a niche market. This is what capitalism is all about.
Capitalism has redefined itself.
It's become corruptilism.
Yes.
I think you're right. Like, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's what happens whenever somebody comes up with a really great idea. There's always other people who use those same words that sound like a really good idea, but package you something completely different in the box that you open up, and you don't even know what's in the box until you get it, have removed all of its restraints, and suddenly it's in your home and you can't get it out.
Sustainability in the hands of the globalists, which means we sustain my aristocracy and your slavery. That's sustainability. We sustain what I want, and we
eliminate you.
Eliminate the competition.
And we control your life, every single aspect of it, a la Aldous Huxley. And you're supposed to say thank you.
Yeah, be grateful for us for enslaving you. In fact, it was just Queen's birthday weekend. Queen's, we get like a Monday off or something. It was just yesterday, and I thought to myself, hey, I know a great way to celebrate this. It's like looking up images of the Queen. Ah, here's a nice one with the Queen waving and smiling very nicely and royally and what have you. And it's like little caption underneath, happy Queen's birthday weekend, slaves.
Slaves.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It got quite a few shares among my fellow, shall we say, parolees of the global plantation.
Parolees, I love it.
You know, we're free range.
Free range, exactly, for the moment. So where is New Zealand on the Agenda 21 story?
We have the three most highest polling political parties being the National Party, with its Prime Minister, who used to work for the Federal Reserve Bank in New York, the Labour Party, whose representative was educated at Harvard and attends Agenda 21 conferences at the Ritz Hotel in Washington or Mumbai. I forget which ones. He's part of Parliamentarians International, which you have to have both be elected into a quote-unquote democratically elected a party and pay by credit card in order to be part of it. and you do these conferences all over the world, and he's a member of that. And then the next party down the line is the Green Party, which has a co-leader, Matiria Ture and Russell Norman, who's from Australia and is a doctor. And the Green Party, in their environmental policy, say our environmental policy is Agenda 21. It's based on Agenda 21. And if you look at the wording and the sentences, phrases, general plans of Agenda 21 that the Greens outline, and then you take it like a transparent slide, you know, when you got those overhead projectors and you put a slide over another and they suddenly match up perfectly. Mm-hmm. That means that the three highest polling parties in this country, 45%, 35%, and 14%, the remainder is all like minor parties and everything, all have pretty much word for word Agenda 21 policy as their environment policy.
Well, you're safe then.
Wow. So it means whoever wins, we lose.
Wow.
And so
that's scary.
How much awareness is there in New Zealand about the reality of Agenda 21?
The awareness is growing, as it always is, because of voices like myself. In fact, there were a number of people in protesting these housing community redevelopments where they were basically kicking out retired veterans and superannuants who had their own kind of community with beach views and everything like that and state housing. And they said to them all, hey, we're going to upgrade all these homes and everything. And they're like, oh, cool, that sounds great, an upgrade, right? And what they meant by upgrade was we're going to cut your homes off of the foundation, sell them off to somewhere down the country, the actual houses themselves, and then sell the land on to Chinese investors, which we're going to bring around by the van load. And the people who are protesting this this quote unquote redevelopment, I went out to see them and record their and document their findings of all of this, and I told them about Agenda 21. And the next time I saw the ladies who I met there that time was at another protest, and they were telling the crowd about Agenda 21 and how dangerous it is and how much they. Whatever I said to them, they decided to go do their research, and they found that I wasn't incorrect, that precisely what's happening to them is exactly the kind of Agenda 21 resettlement, privatisation, controlled suburbs agenda there.
Excellent. Wow. Excellent.
So it might be a drop in the bucket, but I'll tell you what, man, you have a bucket sitting there that keeps having drips into it every now and again, that puppy will overflow and spill all over everything.
You're right.
That is the nature of the battle that we're waging. And that bucket has to have drops and has to overflow. It's the only way that these processes will be controlled. The only way. There is no other way.
Well, I'm never of the mind to say there's only one way to do everything, because I think of it like, as I was mentioning before, about how everything's the opposite of what we're told by official sources that it is. I see a lot of people from officialdom not realizing just how many different agendas there are out here. So there's not one way to enslave people. There's a million ways to enslave people.
And no, therefore, but there's only one way to be free at this point, and that is to refuse to be enslaved.
Indeed. But as I was saying, there's a million ways to refuse to be enslaved. You can stop buying the GMO products. You can start protesting about chemtrails. You can start dogging your politicians with cameras. You can start a garden. You can stop vaccinating people. You can tell people information that they don't want to hear that will spit on your face just because of it, just because you're trying to save their life. But you must do it, because we don't have a choice. The only one way that I probably believe exists is to not do nothing.
Yes. Forgive me. What I meant to say was we have no choice but to act, and to act by spreading information and truth and making sure that other people hear us. As you said, even if they're willing to spit on your face, that sounds like the experience of many people with family gatherings and social environments and so on, where people don't want to hear, just as Bert didn't want to hear. I mean, when I was telling Bert early on in our relationship what I knew to be factual and he couldn't hear it, he wasn't being so nice about not wanting to hear it. you can imagine. Please, you're making my entire world shake. This is not a nice feeling. Stop it. I don't want to hear it. Stop talking about this.
This reminds me of the scene from Fight Club where he grabs his hand and he kisses it and he goes, what is this? And he goes, this is a chemical burn. And he pours lye onto his hand and it reacts with the saliva on it and starts to eat away his flesh. He starts screaming and trying to get away. And he's trying to tell him something through pain, trauma-based mind control. And I think this is the reason why we wake up, is because it's traumatic, not because it's nice and fluffy. This is what the New Age want. They want a nice and fluffy awakening. I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, if your awakening's nice and fluffy, you haven't awakened to shit. Okay? If it has to be traumatic. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything to you. All the things that have taught you the most powerful lessons in your life, all the things that you will never forget, are the most painful things in your life, and that is why they are so valuable. That is why they nexus themselves into your thought processes. That is why when you're deceived badly and ripped over sharply by some description of scumbag, you don't forget it, because your mind tells you that this is a threat and you need to respond to it. That is the awakening that we're trying to facilitate for you, ladies and gentlemen. It will not be nice. Don't expect to love us or thank us for it. The truth is not freedom. The truth is a burden. It is an obligation. And it is one that everybody must take inherently seriously. I may joke about it and what have you, but nonetheless, I take it far more seriously than the vast majority of people on this planet will ever take it.
And you're back to mass. The principle of war, numbers count. So voices, all of the voices need to speak up, need to speak out, need to get the message, not just to their politician, but to all of their friends and their friends and their friends' friends' friends, so that everybody is talking the same language and taking the same action and calling the same representatives or the senators or whatever they are, the government agents, and telling them, no. We're not going to do it your way. We're going to do it a much better way, which is safer, cleaner, and better for us all in the long run.
You know, you heard me mention three different action items. One of the things that happens to people when they start to get involved is they become involved, they take an action, they spread information, and they think they're done. They think that there's one issue, there's one item, there's one struggle, and they're finished, not realizing that
the
globalists are coming at us with unbelievable numbers of assaults, and we have to be ready to fight with unbelievable numbers of responses. It's not one issue. It's not just radiation. It's not just chemtrails. It's not just
GMO
release or GMOs or the need to refuse vaccination. It's all of them. It's a series of intentionally created converging cataclysms, and either we're ready for them or we're not. And if we're not, it's not going to go well for us.
But we all need to stand up together, not one, not twosies, but together, because together we can handle the problem, we can find a solution, and we can go that direction. And, excuse me, but screw the rest of them.
And you need not be a great orator, thinker, philosopher, radio show host, or human thesaurus to say the word no, ladies and gentlemen. It's quite simple.
No,
it's only
right.
One syllable. And every language has a version of it.
You got that right.
And if you're advanced, if you've gone to the next stage and you're your protest education, then there's another phrase. You've mastered no, and then it's don't you dare.
Well, I would say it's still actually just a two-letter word, but it's F-O, and it stands for something else.
That works very, very well.
And not so many words. You know. Thank you very much. Dr. Rima Lewa from the Dr. Rima Truth Report and former General Bert Stubblebine for joining me today for a full two-hour episode. It's been fantastic, great, and I hope to have you guys back on the show again soon.
Thank you so much for having us, Vinny. It is always a pleasure speaking with you and being amused and stirred and educated.
And getting the message out to the right people to take the right action to get the whole system fixed so that we're not Agenda 21, we're our own selves operating as we should. Thank you very, very much, Vinny.
Oh, you're welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, it may be very difficult to fix things, but I can assure you it's a hell of a lot more valuable, even though it's harder than destroying them. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Bear in mind this is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you go to the homepage and you see the PayPal buttons and the Kiwi Bank account, if you happen to be in New Zealand at the time and you want to support your local Truth Radio station, it's me, basically.
I love it.
Not to toot my own trumpet about it, but I'm the only one with a frickin' trumpet in this country, yo. who does the radio and the videos anyway? Everybody else does blogs and authors' books and what have you. And I bring them on the show so that they too can be on video and radio. You see, ladies and gentlemen, we can all work together to expose this scumbaggery, just as long as we don't... Well, what was it the Snoop Dogg said? That comes from the heart. Don't let it go to your head, brother. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Have a very, very nice life. Hope you don't get exterminated in the meantime.